Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatka. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy award-winning band Kitsap. Like us on facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kabu.fm.
Hello, I'm SW Concer, and I hope you'll join me this Thursday morning from 11 to noon for a special hour-long episode of Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'll be talking with comics writer David Walker and artist Marcus Kwame Anderson. They're the co-authors of the new book, The Black Panther Party, A Graphic Novel History. So tune in this Thursday, February 11th, from 11 a.m. till noon, on your community radio station, KBOO.
Support for the Dirtbag and KBOO Community Radio comes from our members and from One Green World, a family-owned and operated nursery off Southeast Foster on 134th Avenue in Portland, providing a selection of fruiting trees, vines, shrubs, and vegetables and supplies. More information is available at onegreenworld.com.
This is KBOO Portland. Hi, Dirtbag listeners. This is your host, Glenn Andreessen. My guest, Jim Gilbert, and I recorded this upcoming show in January, but due to unforeseen circumstances, it wasn't aired. So we are going to air it now. Stay tuned for hints on pruning kiwis, figs, and what's been annoying me this month. Also, we now have a good way for you to contact us with your gardening questions. You can email us at thedirtbag@kabu.org. Once again, that's thedirtbag@kabu.org. We will answer your questions on next month's program. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you for the next hour, along with my co-pilot, Jim Gilbert, and our ace recording engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. And we are indebted to Joe for whatever he does, because it's really makes it easier for us to record in the luxury of our own home. And soon, or whenever it's possible, we'll get back into the studio or with us all three together. So welcome, Jim.
Good morning, Glenn. Happy New Year.
Indeed, it's a good one. Although, boy, the news just never ceases to astound. And our musical selections today are going to reflect that. Well, we've got a good show packed in today. Our plant of the month is asparagus. I don't know that we've talked about asparagus, and if we have, it's been a long time, but this is the time to start thinking about getting those roots in the ground. this month and next month is good for that. It's been very mild so far this year, and oftentimes the directions on planting things will say, you know, plant as soon as the soil can be worked. Well, my soil can be worked year-round pretty much, so that doesn't help me much. Or maybe it does. If you're not going to form clods in the soil, then maybe it's okay. Jim's going to talk about citrus, the winter fruit, as he put it, which I thought was very apt. And we also just touch again on that this is still an ideal time to collect scion wood if you're going to be building your own fruit tree. And we'll talk about what your options are for that. And Jim will give us a little bit of an update on the quince, his quince syrup. Still enjoying that.
Every day.
Oh, every day.
Every
good
day.
Deal.
Yeah, yeah. Great. I mean, you know, I'm not a soda drinker typically, but boy, you pull that syrup in a glass with some carbonated mineral water and just wonderful, wonderful drink.
Well, you're looking vigorous. As usual.
Thank you, Glenn.
One of the things that Joe has introduced us to and provides is I don't know, Jody subscribe to it? The Squadcast? Yes, he does subscribe to that, but it allows him to record each of us individually. And so then his task is to, well, it probably goes together pretty naturally, but he can monitor each channel there. If something goes wrong, we can just cut that out. So it's been very great and a fun learning experience too, but I digress. Well, it's also time to begin pruning, and we'll hit kiwi pruning in particular, but it's also time to, if you do winter pruning, to prune your fruit trees, and you can start on your grapes now too. He'll have an update on the latest incarnation, I don't know if that's the right word, of the Home Orchard Society, essentially the Home Orchard Education Center now. And it's time in the next month to begin seed starting. And I'll give you a few points on that. Of course, I've got something that's annoying me this month. Actually, it's been annoying me for a while, but I'm just going to tell you what it is this month. So. Oh, and also, I haven't talked to Jim about this, but so I'm hoping he has some ideas on our dirtbag dictionary term is why orchardists would paint young tree trunks white. Do they still do that, Jim?
Yeah, yeah. It's quite important.
Well, let's just do that right now, then. Let's just get that, since we're on it. Our dirtbag dictionary. What is the term for that?
Well, you said whitewashing, which is probably not, basically trunk protection. I mean, we do. There's two different ways to do that. I mean, you can use white paint. What we've done a lot here is actually use a tree wrap, which is white on one side and black on the other, and you put the white side out and you wrap it around the trunk loosely. I mean, it just put on with some string to hold it together. And what it does, we started using it on pawpaws because we had a problem here. Every year, we would get trunk burn on the side on the trunk,
sunburn,
and the it would kill. It would eventually kill that portion and cause a canker on the side of the trunk facing southwest, which was the hottest time of the day when the sun was shining on that side of the tree. And by using this trunk protector, this plastic material, or you could do it with paint, you reflect the sun back so it doesn't get so hot, and the trunk is not damaged anymore by that.
So you still do that?
We still do that. Now, you know, we do it primarily on pawpaws because we don't have a fruit orchard. And if you have trees that have low branches, you're not going to have a big problem with sunburn because the branches are going to shade the tree. But if you, in a typical orchard or a planting where you've pruned the lower branches up high, maybe to get away from deer or something, then that issue could be more severe of having the sunburn on the trunk, especially on the south side. So painting is interesting to do. And typically when you use white paint for that, you dilute it. So you don't use it just like straight paint out of the can. You mix it about 50% with water. And you might have to do it, you know, after 2 or 3 years, repaint them, those trunks.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that's good information. Our dirtbag dictionary. You know, this is related, but not part of our term, but I see, and I'm assuming it's some sort of code, but sometimes I'll see different colors of paint on grafted trees, young trees. Is that just done at the nursery to say, well, this is X type of a tree, or do you know what I'm talking about there?
Yeah. So many, many, many years ago, we realized that the best way to keep track of trees that come out of the field after we dig them is to put paint on the trunk. And it's quite a little process. You know, there's a color for the rootstock. There's a color for the variety. The crew goes along with a brush and paints the trunks. And the reason is that when we dig the plants, it's kind of crazy out there. And, you know, the digging tractor is going through fast and people are pulling plants here and there. And if you don't have something on the trunk to identify the actual variety, it's easy for them to get mixed up.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why we do that.
So you still do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It really makes life easy if you've got that paint on there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's begin here with our plant of the month, asparagus. And I asked Jim before we started recording if he had any experience, and he said just digging it or cutting it when he was in the wild, so to speak.
Yeah, I was living up in the mountains in Hood River, and the above Hood River, and the apparently asparagus was a crop there at one point, and birds had of course eaten this. So when asparagus, after it's usable for eating, it becomes a small bush with pretty red berries, and the birds eat those berries, and they poop them around on the fields. And so that's what was had populated the field on the farm I was living on. And so it was really fun to go out and get wild asparagus.
Well, that's a good lead in to just talking a little bit about asparagus, and when I started gardening many years ago, you know, I was in a different economic situation then, and I thought, well, it's just a lot cheaper to buy seeds, you know, a whole pack for $1 rather than one individual asparagus crown for, you know, 25 cents or whatever it was. Seems kind of silly now, but in any event, I started them and grew them out from seed, and boy, did it take a long time before you get any production from seed. It just takes time. And so I recommend now, you know, splurge and buy the root, and they're probably still 25 cents a piece, and plant those, because it'll still be, you know, 2 years or so before you really start getting a good crop of asparagus, because the recommendation is don't harvest anything the first year and very sparingly the second year. But you know, if you've done any type of gardening research at all, oftentimes it'll say to dig a big trench to put the roots in, the asparagus roots in. And I don't know that that's exactly necessary, particularly if it's well mulched. But you want to make sure that it's below ground, certainly. The other thing to keep in mind is that there are some varieties that are all male plants, like Jersey Giant. That's one particular one that they're all males. And so they will not have these berries that Jim referenced earlier that the birds would eat, because those are from the female plants. And which is great, because then you're only getting the energy is only going to growing plants, not or stalks, rather than growing berries, if you will. The downside of that, however, is that your patch doesn't spread. I mean, it'll get a little bit just because they grow from the root, but they're not going to have a big you're not going to be able to dig up roots and share them with your neighbors. because there just won't be that many. But you could always plant more, or I think even divide the roots that you do have. So something to keep in mind when you're starting. I'd recommend going for the all male plants. Pretty easy. Yeah, go ahead.
Ben, I'm trying to remember, it's been a long time since I read about growing asparagus, but as I recall, you talked about, like, you put the roots in and then you don't harvest anything the first year. When the spears come up, do you leave one or two to mature? I mean, you don't take them all away, correct?
That's correct. But that's hardly going to be, I suppose you could do that, but towards the end of the season, they're going to be smaller, and you wouldn't want to be harvesting the smaller ones anyway. I mean, it's just not worth all the work that it goes through that. And those will then get big. You know, they'll get 4, 5, 6 feet tall, these fronds. And that's a good question. That generally they say don't harvest anything less than a pencil diameter.
What diameter?
Pencil. I think a number 2 pencil.
I have one in my hand right now.
Is that a number 2 or is that a 1.5 soft?
It's a standard pencil.
Okay. Yeah, that's the size.
Yeah. Yeah.
The I have had a problem with the asparagus beetle, in that, you know, they lay their little eggs on the plant, and they turn it, they hatch, and then they're black larva that can just denude a spear or a frond of asparagus, and it's pretty pathetic when you see that. But what I found too is that if you encourage the larger wasps in your garden, you know, the paper wasps, mud daubers, and whatnot, and they find those larvae, they will relentlessly look for those black larvae, because they'll harvest, they'll take them and they'll masticate them, and they'll take them back to feed to their young. And after a while, I just feel sorry for the wasps, because they're looking, they're just stopping in at anything that looks like a little dark blob, and they don't find anything because they've cleaned them up. So I generally don't worry about that, because the problem takes care of itself. It takes a little space in your garden. I've kind of devoted one bed to it, and, you know, want it to fill in. Of course, it's not filling in as much as I'd like, because I've got the all male plants, but fresh asparagus is just, you know, it produces so much that by the end of the season, we're ready to move on to something else. Okay, anyway, that's our talk, or that's my take on asparagus. It's a good plant to have. It's very low maintenance. You just mulch it heavily in the fall with compost or manure, and that's about all I do with it. I let the at the end of the season, I just let them grow, and they can be kind of bushy, and if you need to prune them to get them out of there, so be it. But so welcome apart to a garden.
Well, asparagus is awfully good to eat. And I remember when I was about 15 years old that my mother used to just boil asparagus, and I hated it. I really just was like disgusting to me. And I was riding along in the car, and we bought some asparagus, and the spears were sticking up out of the grocery bag, and I broke one off and ate it. And I thought, wow, that is really good. And so as I got older, I realized that the way to cook asparagus is not to boil it or even but stir fry it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And boy, it just turns beautiful green, and it's so good. Oh, man.
There are even purple asparagus plants that would turn green when they get cooked, but they're good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to our first musical break here, and this all has to do with the political landscape. I might be going to become self-evident here, in that we're still having a problem with the truth. So the first selection I have is from Brian Auger. I played a little bit of Brian Auger recently. Brian Auger's Oblivion Express is the name of his band, and was very active in the 70s, and he even performed with his daughter at one of the Portland Blues Festival or the Waterfront Blues Festival several years ago now. But anyway, this is a song of his called Truth from the album Second Wind. Brian Auger. Something to think about there. The truth is hard for this administration. Well, let's try something that's actually not as hard as one might think, and that's growing citrus. And as Jim calls it, the winter fruit. Why do you call it the winter fruit, Jim?
Well, right now our greenhouses are full of lemons and limes and oranges, and it's pretty amazing, really, how nice it can be to be able to, when you want to cook something with using a lemon, you just walk out and grab a lemon. Now, not everybody has a greenhouse, of course, and so you don't really need one in order to grow citrus indoors and to grow them in Oregon. And the only problem with Oregon growing citrus in Oregon is you really have to grow them in a pot, because you've got to bring them inside in the wintertime. While citrus actually grows quite well in a normal climate, it's not particularly winter hardy. And depending upon where you live, Glenn, I'm still jealous of your harvesting tomatoes in late November, but normally that wouldn't be so likely. And certainly where we live, you know, we get temperatures. When temperatures drop into the low 20s, it's pretty tough on fruit, any fruit.
Well, on the citrus here, is it the low temperature, you know, freezing, or 35 or 30?
Yeah. So where citrus grows in Northern California, I mean, it grows pretty far north in Northern California. Temperatures are oftentimes in the 30s, so it's not the actual that kind of temperature that's going to hurt them. It's really the freezing that hurts. And once they, you know, they're it's kind of an interesting fruit in that it takes about a year. They bloom in the winter, and
very fragrantly, we might add.
Yes, very nice flowers. So they bloom in winter, late winter, obviously, usually, and then the fruit takes about a year to mature. So it starts, starts then, and then goes into the following winter before you actually get the fruit off the plant. But if the temperature is above freezing, they could stay outside pretty much year round. But even a slight light frost doesn't hurt them. But when you get down into the mid to low 20s, you destroy the fruit on the plant, and so you got to be sure to protect them from that. There are other ways to protect the plant besides bringing it indoors. Some people will make a small enclosure around the plant, like a little plastic kind of tent or something to keep the temperature up. You should provide, if you wanted to try doing that, you'd want to provide for some way to put some heat in there in case it gets into be a significant cold spell. But most people grow the plant in a pot, and the size of pot depends on how old the plant is. So you can, a 5-gallon container, a citrus can grow in that for 3 to 4 years easily. The one of the most important considerations is the rootstock. And we've talked about rootstock for other fruits in recent programs. Citrus has its own rootstock selections. And most of the rootstock for citrus is grown for commercial orchards. And they want a decent-sized tree, not necessarily real big, but they want something decent size. For the homeowner, the most dwarfing rootstock for citrus is called Flying Dragon. And it's a relative, it's the Latin name is Poncyrus trifoliata. It's a deciduous form of citrus relative, and Flying Dragon is a form of that is very, very dwarfing. It's really a remarkable rootstock. You can actually grow it alone too, and it makes a really attractive contorted bush, but the fruit's kind of tart, and you could probably make something with it, but it's mostly it's used as a rootstock. And one of the among the various characteristics of it, it bears really young. So we will have gallon-sized citrus plants with fruit on them. Plant will be maybe a foot and a half tall. And have fruit.
Is there a reason to pinch off those blossoms?
No, not at all. Once if it's in a pot growing, let it grow and let it fruit. And of course, unless you wanted to make it have a bigger, if you wanted to have it grow larger, then yeah, you probably should take off the blossoms and let it wait another year. But if you're happy with the size in that pot, let it fruit, because it will continue growing it year after year. It's extremely dwarfing. And if you get back in the day, I tried growing, when I was a kid, actually, I tried growing citrus from seeds, and that's a mistake.
Okay, well, there's two of us here now. Don't grow things from seeds. Fruit from seed.
Yeah. Eventually you will get citrus fruit, but by the time you get there, the tree will be maybe 6 to 8 feet tall minimum, covered with thorns, and the fruit probably won't be very good. So the other method of growing citrus is to do it from cuttings, which will get you the type of fruit that you want. For example, if you had a Meyer lemon and you grew a cutting of a Meyer lemon, improved Meyer lemon, that's what you'd get. But you get a much larger plant, and not really satisfactory for the type of growing we're talking about. So the Flying Dragon rootstock is what we use, and we graft the variety on it. And we've discovered to be the most satisfactory way to grow a citrus plant. So once you have the plant in a pot, and if you get one from your local nursery, the second part of another important aspect of it is to have the plant near a sunny location. I mean, a sunny or light, I should say, better for Oregon, a patio door, a bunch of nice windows, someplace where it gets plenty of light, because it is an evergreen. And if it's in too dark a spot, it's going to drop its leaves. And if it drops its leaves, the fruit won't ripen satisfactorily. So you want to keep it, and if you can, if you've got the wherewithal to do it, you can put it out on a patio or something during warm weather, even if it's raining, and give it plenty of light that way, and that'll keep it happier too, because outdoor temperatures are really what it wants as much as possible. But if you have it indoors all the time in the winter, a sunny location is really important. Another characteristic or important thing to keep in mind is watering. Many times I've seen problems with potted citrus plants where people overwater them because they think of them as a typical house plant, but they're not. And their water needs are minimal in the winter. So as long as the soil is fairly moist, you don't need to water them. Because if you water too much, you will have root rot, and then you will have leaf loss, and you'll think, wow, the plant or the leaves will start to curl up, and you think, wow, it's getting dry, I need to water more, and then that's kind of the end of that plant. So definitely pay attention to watering. Fertilizing we do in the spring. You can get at most garden centers sell citrus fertilizer. It's more acidic than typical fertilizer for potted plants, and just apply that according to the label directions. Pests are not usually an issue, although you can have them, and you want to watch out for scale. You can remove it by hand if you catch it early enough, and then again, that's a good reason to keep the plant outdoors as much as possible. Certainly the plant will be a lot happier if you can put it outside in the spring, summer, and fall, and just bring it inside when really cold weather starts to threaten, like in November would be my recommendation for that.
And so can you grow all varieties of citrus here? I mean, from tangerines and grapefruit?
Yeah. I mean, Meyer is interesting. Improved Meyer lemon, or lemons in general, seem to be one of the easiest to grow. I don't know why, but they bear a lot of fruit, and it comes on really fast. Limes are pretty easy. Mandarin oranges are pretty easy. They're particularly hardy too. Actually, they'll stand the plant will stand frost into the teens, but the fruit, of course, if it has fruit on it, if it's ripening, that wouldn't be good. But there even well, there's some fruit. There's some citrus like the I'm trying to think Australian finger lime, which is not hardy at all. So you want to be a little more careful with that. But generally speaking, citrus is a pretty darn easy plant to grow. And like I said, I call it winter fruit because everything else is done by now. So, you know, there you've got something fun to eat and do something with.
Yeah. Well, just the fragrance of the blossoms alone would be worth it for me.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They are really, really nice plants.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. That's citrus, something to do for the winter there. We can still go ahead. Yeah.
I was just, you know, we had talked about trying to find a way for people to be able to write to us with questions. I don't know if we've done that yet, but it should be maybe the next show we could have because I imagine people, after talking about this citrus, I'm a lot of people are doing this, and I suspect some have questions about it.
Okay. I'll make that they can write at KBOO. You can't tell them exactly what it is, but I get emails from people that have written to KBOO, so we'll give you better information next month.
Okay.
And speaking of fruit, we can still gather scion wood now, even though it's a little warm here. But here we are, you know, we're recording this actually the week before our show. But there's, you know, the trees are still dormant, even though it's been pretty warm.
There was about a week ago, there was a couple of days that it felt like spring. I get a little worried when that happens this time of year. But now we're back pretty normal weather. And yeah, the plants are totally dormant. So, you know, you can usually count on collecting scion wood through February without a problem of most fruits.
Yeah. And once again, you know, if you have a plant that you want to propagate, you can, you know, cut the scion wood, put a little water in a bag, shake the bag out, from the water, so there's just the residue left, and put the cyanwood in the bag, and somehow make note of which is the top of the cyan piece. So generally, it's flat on the bottom and angled at the top. That's just how it's done. So you can differentiate the top from the bottom. It wouldn't work if you grafted it upside down. And then, if you can find rootstock, which we mentioned last month of the demise of the Home Orchard Society, then you know you'll have to graft it on your own if you know what you're doing. We do know that you can buy rootstock at least a couple of nurseries. One Green World has it in Southeast Portland, and Burnt Ridge is in, I don't know how you'd classify that, a little north of Vancouver.
But near Centralia, Washington, and Rain Tree is in that same region, and they both sell by mail order as well as does One Green World, too. So,
well, okay, so that's a definite possibility. We'll talk a little bit later about how the Home Orchard Society is no more. They disbanded and I don't know what else they did. Dissolved the organization. But the Arboretum, the Home Orchard Society's Arboretum at Clackamas Community College is still going, and they have reformed and reorganized as the Home Orchard Education Center. And they have cyanwood there for sale, and they've got all sorts of workshops and whatnot. We'll have more information on this in the months to come, but they don't have rootstock for sale. So a little bit more information on that later if we have time. And let's see, finally in this segment, Jim is still having quince syrup every day. And he's got a beautiful complexion. His hair is wonderfully wavy. I can see what that quince syrup is doing. Joe, you're going to have to drink some of that. And me too.
Yeah, you know, I thank you, Glenn. You're being very nice. Of course, there's a pretty out of focus photograph here. I mean, we're sitting on the screen.
Oh yeah. Your background is you 20 years earlier.
That's right. But sure, that quince syrup is pretty cool. And what the thing that we keep in mind, something we could put on the KBOO website perhaps as a recipe for it. It's pretty simple, but it's not quince like it's not the same quince that we think of when we think of the big yellow fruit. You know, it's a flowering quince, which is mostly grown around here as an ornamental. But it's actually a popular fruiting plant in parts of Europe. And I'm doing some research on it right now, actually, with some friends. Years ago, I had a friend who was really into it. He came here from Ukraine and told me all about what they were doing with it there. And that's what inspired me, actually, to start growing it here. But then more recently discovered this process of making syrup from it. And what we've discovered, and we're experimenting with other fruits too, but this is a tart fruit. And that process of the sugar pulling the juice out and of the fruit and making it sweet, but he still has this wonderful flavor. It's quite remarkable. I think there's a product here for somebody to take on someday.
Yeah, if you were 20 years younger.
That's right. The syrup company, right?
Yeah.
Northwood Syrup.
Okay, but so it's not. We're not talking about the big yellow quince. We're talking about the
flowering quince. Yeah, unfortunately, you can't buy that in stores. So, most produce places don't really sell tart fruit. I mean, it's not something. You know, you have to grow it yourself. And there are other berries and things we're interested in like I think I mentioned magnolia vine. It makes in Korea, they make a syrup that knocks your socks off. It's so darn good from that berry. And so it's inspiring me to grow it. I've been growing the plant for years, but it's inspiring me to plant out a little orchard of it.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, well, we'll come up for air and take our second musical break here. This is self-explanatory here from Lucky Peterson. This is called You Can't Fool Me. We'll be back. Lucky Peterson from his album Beyond Cool. You Can't Fool Me. Well, January, February is ideal pruning time, and kiwis is probably, along with grapes, are one of the two plants that require the most pruning to have successful crop. I know the rule of thumb for pruning grapes is that we're taking off about 90% of last year's growth. Is it about that too with kiwi? I don't have room for kiwi, so don't grow them.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk for quite a while about kiwi. It's a pretty fascinating plant, actually. And when you say the word kiwi, I immediately think not only of the big fuzzy fruit that we buy in the store, but hardy kiwi, which is a smaller thumb-sized fruit with no fuzz, and then Arctic Beauty kiwi, which is a little bit smaller fruit, no fuzz, and a very pretty, beautiful ornamental plant that likes some shade. So there's all those three kinds. The two that require more pruning are the fuzzy kiwi and the hardy kiwi, because they're very vigorous vines. And while you probably don't take as much off as you do with grapes, to get good fruit crops, you need to prune quite a bit. I used to joke, well, you could make, if you prune them before Christmas, you could make a lot of wreaths with the prunings. For example, I can bet that there are listeners out there that have kiwi plants of one of those two types and wonder, what the heck am I supposed to do with this? And
well, I think maybe the thing to keep in mind is that it's probably better, well, I might even say it is better to prune than to not prune, even if you don't know what you're doing. If you just made any cuts, it's going to be hard to kill the plant, and most likely it's going to benefit it.
Yeah, you won't kill the plant. But to keep in mind with kiwi, the most important thing about pruning is keep in mind that the fruit comes on spurs that come off last year's growth. So if you cut...
So say that again.
So last year, a lot of times we'll have these big, vigorous canes that will come out, and it could be 8 feet long or more. The fruit, the flowering, the new growth that comes off of those spurs is where you'll get fruit.
So there's going to be fruit all along or canes coming off all along this 8 foot long new growth from last year. Is that correct? Okay. So the grower can imagine, goodness, all that new growth, I'm going to have lots of fruit.
Yes, and that's very, and well, and that's true. It's more toward the base. Not every bud along that shoot is going to produce fruit, but the ones that are toward the base is where you're going to get most of the fruit. The older part of that shoot. So when you prune, the first thing to do is to identify the shoots that grew last year. Not the old part of the plant, but the new part of the plant that grew just last season.
Because the old part of the plant isn't going to have any fruit. Is that correct? Okay.
That's correct. So that's the first thing to do, identify those. Now you're gonna if the kiwi's been growing for several years and hasn't been pruned, it's gonna be a jungle. Yeah. So you gotta to have a good cup of coffee and some sharp pruners and go out there and just be prepared. And you don't have to worry about doing it perfectly, but those if you find the big shoots that grew last year and cut those back, say if it's an 8-foot long shoot, cut off at least 2/3 of it. So you go from 8 feet to maybe 2.5 feet to 3 feet. That's the first thing to do. And then when you do that, you will find smaller, thinner shoots also inside if we're talking about an older plant. And you can thin out ones if it's like really dense, you can cut off a lot of the smaller material. Some of that may bear fruit, but it's going to be hard. The plant will do much better and you'll get bigger fruit by removing that.
And you don't mean, or you certainly mean removing it, the whole thing. So we're not cutting off 2/3 of that inner smaller growth. We're taking off 100% of this that inner smaller growth.
Yeah, prune it back to the main branch from which it came. And you'll just thin out the plant. When a kiwi that's properly pruned, and this might a person probably can't even pull this off in the first year or two if it's an older plant, it will kind of look like a spine. You will have a main lateral from which the ribs come out, and the ribs you could 3 feet long. And every year, the plant will generate new ribs, and you can remove the old ones.
Mm-hmm. And with grapes, I would even say, that it could be the same kind of visual. I like it. You've got your spine, that's the main trunk, and then out of that, last year grew these long, long ribs. So in the case of kiwis, Jim said we'll bring them back. Take off 2/3 of it. With grapes, I would say take off 90% of it. So we're only leaving a little spur, a little rib that has one or two buds on it. And it's from those buds that will grow longer ribs, if you will, vines, cordons, and that's where the fruit will be. So grapes and kiwi are kind of, they're similar in our approach.
Yeah, a lot more pruning than you would on a fruit tree, for example. I mean, the result of this can be huge amounts of fruit. I remember up at the North Willamette Experiment Station near Aurora that a fairly young hardy kiwi plant that was pruned there got over 100 pounds of fruit.
Hmm.
I have a friend in Coos Bay. This is pretty interesting. Coos Bay. I have a friend in Coos Bay who's been growing a kiwi plant there for a number of years. And she wrote to me and said she harvested 730 pounds of fuzzy kiwis.
From one plant?
From one plant. And it's big, of course. But crazy amount of fruit you can get. And the other important part of the pruning of kiwi is to keep in mind prune them by the middle of February. Typically I find it, some people debate this, but I think it's important to prune them when they're really fully dormant. If you wait too long, they'll start to sap will start to flow, and people use the word bleeding. Some people don't like to think that way, but the sap will flow, and if you prune it, you will get a lot of sap coming out. I don't think that's particularly good. Others don't think it's a big deal, but I strongly recommend trying to do the pruning in the winter on kiwi.
Yeah, and I would say the same for grapes. I tend, in years past, have tended to do it towards the end of February, but that's only because I would give a class on grape pruning, and so I would use my plants for demonstration, and so I would wait to prune it then. But this year, that's not going to happen. Not going to do it, and I'll do it. I can do it anytime. And even though we might have freezing weather, that's fine. It's not going to hurt to prune now for those things.
And also probably good to mention that, for kiwis, depending upon how the plant is growing in your conditions, about the same time, mid to late February, is a good time to fertilize them too.
Hmm.
And I don't know about grapes so much because I'm more familiar with growing kiwi, but they do like to have fertilizer to grow well. And we used to figure that for a mature plant, 1 pound of actual nitrogen spread around the root system, so not just at the base, but around the base of all around the plant. So if you had a fertilizer that was 5% nitrogen, what is that, 20 pounds of that fertilizer, like composted chicken manure or something spread around the base would give you a good fertilizer for the kiwi.
Yeah, generally, I don't think we tend to grapes don't tend to need it. I mean, they're putting on a tremendous amount of growth anyway. I mean, compost around it would be good because it's not necessarily nitrogen rich. But I do have a story to tell about my grapes that I've grown two grapes for decades. And one is Glenora, which is a fine seedless blue grape, and the other is Canadice, which is my favorite seedless purple grape. And I had my Glenora, which is a more vigorous grape, strung out where it gets better sun. But this year I decided, or last year actually, I decided that I wanted to give the Canadice more sun. And so it's easy to change pruning methods and styles with grapes. If you've been pruning, generally what I do is I leave the main coridon, that is to say the vertebrate, the spine, and it's going horizontal, and then I prune off the vertebrae to two, maybe 4 or 5 inches, so they'll have two what were we calling those ribs. And then I did change it so I just cut off the big main horizontal branch or the vine, if you will, and instead I strung out there one of the new growths from last year on my Canadice. So I just started over, brand new growth, cut down the old one from the other variety and strung it out a different direction, and put a brand new growth that all happened last year along my trellis. And we had the best crop of Canadice grapes we've ever had. It was more sun. There were they were spread out, so I had fewer buds, but the grape production was great. Maybe I'll talk more about that a little bit next month, about how, more specifically, grapes for if you want to change where your grapes are growing or how you prune them.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be good to talk about grapes in general, about varieties like you just mentioned. You know, those are two very good varieties, and it's kind of interesting. In Oregon, we have a big wine grape industry here, but it's puzzling to me somewhat is that we don't grow table grapes commercially.
Mm.
There's no reason we couldn't grow our own grapes here for fresh eating.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, what is it, Thompson grape, the ones that you normally get in the store? I mean, occasionally you'll get a pretty good, bunch of those, but they're nothing compared to these other ones. They're not as big, the grapes that I grow as those purple and green Thompson.
Oh, there's so many wonderful grapes out there that are not, you can't get in a store. Seedless Blue Muscat is one that we grow here that we really, really like a lot. I mean, there's just, you know, it's just like with everything, with apples and all these other fruit. I mean, the ones that are grown commercially are grown that way because for some other reason than flavor, they're usually grown because they can be transported for thousands of miles or kept in cold storage for a year or something, you know.
Well, another thing we wanted to talk about is planting bare root plants now. This is the perfect time. I mean, I'm assuming that the selection will be getting more and more for the next month in garden centers and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, I can speak to that most clearly because we have a crew right now grading those bare root plants that we dug out of the field about a month ago. And
what do they grade them on?
Well, so you've got a pile of bare root fruit trees. I mean, it's funny, you know, you think about a fruit tree, and when you think of it, you think of this plant in the ground with leaves all over it and flowers and fruit and all that. But when it's dormant, you're just a bunch of, it's just a stick. So,
and these are grafted
fruit trees, right? So we have sticks with roots and no soil, and so we grade them by size. So typically the caliper or the diameter of the tree determines the grade, and we go through this pile of maybe several hundred trees and big bundles of 10, depending of different sizes.
Do they do that visually, or do they have a measuring device?
Well, usually visual, after you get experienced at it, you can do it visually. There are tools for that purpose too, to measure the caliper. But yeah, our crew is real good at it, and most of it's just done by looking at the tree. And it also at that same time, you grade out ones that might be damaged in some way, not be satisfactory for planting, and those are put aside.
What does is the size a bigger one more expensive?
I'm sorry?
Is a bigger caliper tree more expensive?
We charge more for it, yes, because...
I mean, is that why they're graded?
Yes, and because some people don't want big ones. I mean, if depending upon the customer, some people want actually a smaller tree. If you're shipping the plants by the mail, you know, you want a smaller plant that's going to fit into a box. If you're going to sell it at a garden center or possibly put it in a pot, a bigger plant is better for that.
Okay.
More impressive looking.
So anyway, you have these sticks now with roots on it.
Sticks with roots, and they all do really well. And this is a good time to be, in Oregon, you know, Western Oregon and Washington. This is a good time to be getting those plants and putting them in the ground, right? I mean, the weather's really nice, and the sooner they're in the ground, the sooner the roots will start to grow. Because our soil is never very cold here, it allows for root growth right away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, unlike your friend from Vladivostok, where it's frozen feet below the ground.
Yeah, there's parts of the world, many of them, even in the United States, you know, in the Midwest, upper Midwest, where the ground freezes, you know, several feet deep even, and you can't do anything until April, maybe at the earliest, and it's a totally different climate. We're really fortunate here. I oftentimes think of those pioneers that walked across the country and found this amazing place.
Yeah. Of course, there were people that were already here that knew about it. But
yeah, right. That's true.
Okay, well, that's... this is a good time to plant because it's you're not going to go wrong if you're able to plant now, so that's good here. Just in the remaining few moments here, looking at my sheet here of information that we wanted to cover... I'll leave the seed starting until next week, next month, which would be right in the heart of time when, you know, just time to plant just about everything or most things indoors, including the warm crops, tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, plus cold season crops. And certain plants can go outside next month, even February, so they can get started now too. So finally, let's see, we've covered our dirtbag dictionary term. Well, what's annoying me this month? Well, actually, I've been thinking about this for a while, and I may have even mentioned this. I can't remember. I didn't have it written down, but I don't remember this being the case years ago, but I notice it more and more now, particularly on NPR, where they have a reporter on, and there's the interviewer asking questions of the reporter, and yet all the it seems that the questions and the answers are already written down, because they're reading the question, and then the reporter goes into, obviously, they're reading it too. And so it doesn't seem to be much of an interview. Anyway, maybe that's just me. But it seems like in the past, there was more, you know, it was just a conversation rather than a scripted question and answer thing. And I get agreeing nods from my compatriots. Well, we are out of time, and look forward to the next month, whatever it is, 4 weeks, I think it's going to be from this date. Okay, Jim, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. And Joe, couldn't do it without Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. I'm sure Joe's got a website someplace there. Is that, that's not Joe Wilson photo? No. No, he'll get it to us. Bergman Productions, you can find it there if you have any recording and needs of that. Okay, that's it for now. We'll go out on our final truth, or if you will. This is called Be Careful with the Fool. This is Steve Daniels singing from his album Saturday Night Blues. This is Glenn Andreessen along with Joe Wilson and Jim Gilbert. Thanks for listening. Be well.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy miércoles 10 de febrero del 2021.